Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And yep, it's middle of the week, and it's the midweek show of Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who play with needles. So, okay, I'm working on, it won't go away. The stocking will not end.
The 22-year odyssey?
Oh, man, it will not end. I burnt some midnight oil over the weekend. I mean, I was up till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, because I was just determined to have it done Sunday. It will not end. And so, this, you know, this is how crazy it is. This morning, I usually get up around 5. Instead of doing my usual thing, like going to ride my bike and doing some reading, I actually got up, went downstairs, and started working on that stocking. I forgot that when you do these shepherd's bush stockings, when you think the stitching's done and you go to put in all of the little embellishment things, they take a while. It's like, oh, geez, stop it. So I'm down to, I think, a half dozen buttons that I have to put on, you know, different shapes, and then I'll be done. So after we get done tonight, it'll get finished. I'm staying up till it's done. I want it off the rack. That's it. And then there's this, it's, you know, Christmas stocking, so there's these gifts, and there's one on there that calls for rickrack. And so there's this 6-inch or so length of rickrack that is pretty heavy-duty stuff. I mean, it's pretty thick and pretty heavy-duty. And it says tack it on the back and then crisscross it in front of the present and tack it down with an X in the middle. Well, I have no idea how you get that rickrack through the ground cloth to tack it on the back.
So wait, now I don't understand. So I know what rickrack is, right?
Right.
I think most people, hopefully. So you're supposed to pass it through the fabric?
Well, that's what it looks like in the picture, and they said to tack it on the back. So,
are you sure it doesn't mean just wrap? So you could do that, and hopefully somebody will chime in and say how the way to do this is. But what you could also do is just fold the ends, like cut it to the length that you want it, plus a quarter of an inch, and then just tack it down through to the back. Do you know what I mean? So that it shows up the same way on the front without having to thread it through.
Yeah, maybe that's what they mean. Not clear.
Well, does it go from edge to edge?
Yeah, edge to edge of this what is effectively a present in a stack of presents.
Okay. So, all right, I understand.
So so that hung me up for a good half hour this morning trying to figure it out. First, just getting it through a needle so I could even get it through the ground cloth. Then I practiced on the side, and it just wasn't happening. So I thought, this isn't right. And I posted in Stitch Mania and a couple other groups and got no response. So, and then I was asking Marg about it. You know, what do you think? And we both agreed, and this has bothered me anyway from day one, that it seemed like this piece of rickrack was really out of scale. It was too big and too heavy and seemed out of scale.
Right. Was it purchased or was it part of the kit?
It's part of the kit.
Yeah, okay.
It's not a separate thing. So then I bought some silk straw, sterling silver silk straw. I bought just for the heck of it. You know, it was just one of those things where, hey, that looks really cool. I might use it someday. And so I pulled a piece of that out and laid it on the present, and it looked more comfortable to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that I knew I could stitch. So that's what I ended up doing. After a day of contemplation, that's what I ended up doing was putting this silk straw on. And it's silver, and to me, it looks just fine and maybe even better. And then I had some beads I bought, little alphabet beads I bought. It was a bag for a buck at a bead store. And there was a C in there, and it's for Connor, grandson Connor. So there's a C in there. So I'm going to put that in the middle and tack it down, and I'm calling it good. But it was just kind of frustrating because I did spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to get rickrack through 28-count linen, which I don't think was going to happen.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
No. So that's...
That sounds like it has to be tacked onto the surface.
Yeah, and maybe that was my problem. I was taking it too literal in that tack it to the back, meaning, just like you suggested, fold it over and tack it.
Yeah.
So anyway, it just, you know, and then there was two colors, two threads that one was the main red color, and you're supposed to get two skeins, and I did. Well, I ran out, but I just had little bits and pieces. Like there's a little train at the bottom, and I just needed a couple of rows of red. And I ran out. So I go to the store, and they have the color. And so I bought a skein and got home and realized I had bought 6-stranded floss instead of number 5 pearl. So, you know, I get home and I go, all right, now I'm going to get this finished up. Oh, man, it's like, you know, think when you're at the store, idiot. So I have this nice skein of 6-stranded floss that I have no use for. And it was just, it's just one little thing after another. It just keeps delaying me. And then this morning it was, there's a couple of just standalone rows of X's where it's an X every other stitch. And I had tried to finish it off smoothly. And of course I'm trying not to have carryover thread show at the bottom, show through the linen.
Yeah. Right.
And so I thought I'd finish that off. Right. Well, no, they were both coming loose. So I had to take those out and restitch them. It's just been these nitpicking things, and I'm at the end, you know, it's, I wouldn't mind if I was in the middle.
Right. Right. Well, at the end, your motivation really is right. Just, you start getting antsy, right? You just want to be done.
I want it off that rack. So tonight it gets finished. Those last few beads are going, or buttons or whatever are going in, and tomorrow it's going in the mail to the Twisted One. On to Vana, get it fixed, make it into a stocking, and but you're right. It's just get this thing done. It won't end. So, but I'm proud of it. I mean, it really is stitched up nice, and it really is very nice stocking. I mean, it's not like I've turned on it, but man, it will not stop.
Right,
it just
right.
will not stop.
Well, and the pictures that you've shown too, every stitch. I mean, this is I think your greatest strength is your perfectionism, because every stitch is perfect. You know, you look at it and there's nothing that you see, like you can tell an area was rushed, or, you know, all the thread tensions are beautiful, and, you know, you'll be able to look at that for a long time and know that you did a good job. And so things like rickrack and, you know, trims and embellishments and things, they're all just, they're arbitrary, aren't they?
Well,
you know,
yeah,
just because
yeah.
the kit says it has to be that doesn't mean that it has to be that.
Yeah.
You can make up whatever you want, and it doesn't mean that, you know, maybe you don't like that thing, right?
Right, right.
So,
no, that's, yeah, and that's the thing. But I mean, the embellishments really do add a nice little dimension to the stocking. But it could stand by itself without any of those easily.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah. But you know me. My God.
I do. Well, and that, you know, so there's the element of, okay, I want to change this because I like it more. And then there's the element of, I want to change this because it's too hard. And I know that to you would drive you crazy, because
yeah, not
you,
happening
you know,
there.
No, because if it's too hard, it's going to make you want to do it more.
Oh yeah. That just raises the game. Oh no.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. So it's getting done tonight. Yeah. I was getting a button down, of course, trying to make them tight to the canvas. And for some reason, the needle, you know, I'm concentrating on fishing the floss through underneath all the stitches. And for some reason, the needle was just hung up. And so I pulled and pulled, which was stupid. And, you know, what are the odds that what it was hung up on was the loop of a Bargello tuck for the end of one of the stitches? So I pulled it out. It's like, you idiot. So so then, you know, then that's 10 minutes to get it back in, to get it tucked back in. I mean, it's not a big deal, but, you know, there's 10 more minutes gone by. I could have had another button on, and oh, geez, it was just so. Enough of my griping. It's going to be done tonight. maddening stuff. Yep. So, yeah. Yeah. I want, there's something else I want to stitch. Not this anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And also, so normally you could just put it aside and stitch something else for a while, but you've set this goal for yourself right. that you're going to do it. So now you have to.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This would be under different circumstances. This would be a prime candidate for take it off the rack, put it in a bag somewhere. I'll come back to it in a few months, but no, I'm on a mission. I want these done before Christmas so that I don't have that hanging over me for next Christmas. And no, it's going to get done. So yeah. Ah, maddening. So you've been doing any more? Huh?
Yeah. Patience. I have been, working on the stump work piece. In fact,
yeah.
I'm close to finished because it's a small piece. So all the ground, the surface embroidery is done, except for a couple of little embellishment type things, nothing substantial. All of the flower petals that are the wired slips that are the separate pieces are done. And so now I'm working on transparent wired slips. So that's the next step on the ladder of difficulty, I guess. So what it is basically is you can't like the wired slips on a ground cloth. You can draw on the cloth and then put the wire down where you want it. For this, you have to do you bend the wire in the shape that you want it. So you have a piece of paper that has printed the shape that you want, and you bend the wire on the paper until you get it to where you need to. And then you tape it down to the fabric because you're stitching on transparent fabric. So it's an organza that I'm using.
Oh.
How would I describe it? It's pretty transparent. If you can think of an insect wing, that's about pretty much what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
So you tape the wire down to hold its shape, and then you couch it. So basically you're just whipping around the wire through the ground fabric. And then stitching any decorative stitches that you do in a wing. So in a butterfly or an insect wing, you usually have those little veins.
Right.
So those stitches are getting done sort of at the same time. So it's a little challenging. It's not a difficult stitch, or it's difficult to do well. It comes down to, I think, the same thing that we've talked about before, where it's, you would like this because it is painstaking. And so you're stitching, it's thread. So, okay. I'm trying to just think of how to describe it. If you have the wire and it's going horizontally, you are, you're couch stitching, right? So you're stitching around the wire through the fabric, around the wire, but you have to do it so that your couching stitches are completely next to each other, right? They have to lay side by side.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because you want to cover the wire completely, but you also don't want to overstitch, right? Because then it'll be lumpy.
Right.
So you really have to stitch. It's almost like you know how you have to get satin stitch completely flat, and you don't want it to overlap or anything, and you want everything to lay really flat. This, you're stitching with sewing thread, so it's very fine thread to begin with. So it's many stitches that have to lay completely flat next to each other. So it's painstaking to do. And it's funny because I look at it and it's maybe 3/8 of an inch long, this wing. And I think, like, how many hours have I spent on this already? Just stitching, you know, going around and around and around. And this is one of those, you have to, you know, I could see how somebody could get frustrated and bitter and bored. And I think it's just a mental state where you could say, oh my God, I don't want to do any more of these because it takes forever. And I've invested all these hours in this teeny tiny little thing. Or you can look at it as, this is just this meditative state where, you know, it's very painstaking. You have to pay attention to it. So it just occupies just the right amount of brain power. So it's really just a mental state, a matter of perspective. So I like it. I'm enjoying it.
You sound like you're getting more comfortable and confident with it though.
Yeah, I think so. I think as the piece progresses, you see improvements, right? So the first, you'll do 4 leaves, and the first leaf, you're feeling your way and seeing, all right, well, when I do it this way, you know, it doesn't look so good, but if I do it this other way, this looks a little bit better. And that's what's nice about this piece. So if you have 12 flower petals. The first one might be a little rough and the second one, but by the ninth one, you're getting sort of a groove down and you're learning, you're getting practice. It's just like anything else. So, the flower petals are needle painted, and that was the most intimidating part of the whole thing, was just this idea, because it's so subjective.
Yeah.
There's no, pattern. There's no grid there. There's nothing. If you just follow the directions, you will get it right. Mm-hmm. You really have to kind of decide for yourself kind of when it's enough and when it's not enough. It's kind of painterly, right? When are you done with that painting?
Right.
So that's the part that intimidated me the most, because it's where I had to, make decisions. And it kind of, once you get the gist of it, it gets a lot easier, I have to say. And maybe another flower or a different kind of leaf is going to be harder because the shading is different. But it's not as difficult as I thought it was going to be.
Did you feel when you got the last petal done, did you feel like you had at least a decent grasp of needle painting?
Yes, I think so. I think so. But that said, I think that there's going to be everything that you stitch is going to be different.
Well, yeah.
Right. So it's going to be different. This is a little easier because you're just going from a dark red through a couple of other reds. So, it's an easy blend, and it's not a very obvious blend. It's not like a pansy petal where you're going from a light yellow to a very dark purple to white, where you have to blend that, that's going to be the next one where it's going to be, all right, this is going to be a little bit more difficult because you have to do that elegantly and gracefully, but the colors don't really blend at all. But on a flower, that's exactly what they do. It's sort of a, that's what the flower petals look like. Right. So this is where I think the advice to, look at photographs was really one of the key things for me. So what I've started doing is not looking at the diagram or the stitched piece as much. So I look at that at the beginning. So, okay, this is what somebody else stitched, and this is what it looked like when they did it, and this is what it's supposed to look like. But then I put that aside, and for reference, I just pull up pictures of the actual flower.
Okay.
Because I want it, because really that's what you're going for, right? Is a realistic flower. So I'm finding that if I do that at least every once in a while, it brings me back to what it is that I'm supposed to be doing. So I feel like I have a little bit better grasp of it. So like looking at a pansy petal, that's going to be that really, striking transition. I could look at the way somebody else stitched it, and I would have an understanding of how someone else stitched it. Or I could look at a picture of the flower and understand what that flower really looks like. And then sort of combine those two bits of information and try to make it work. So I think there's going to be a lot of things that are more difficult than this, just because of the nature of the way that they blend.
Mm-hmm.
But this was okay. This was all right. I've got this. So, but it's funny because I grabbed, I'm doing this, Jacobean Crewel Work piece because it's a good, piece to take back and forth to other places. It's a good travel piece. Yeah. And I jumped back in. I hadn't stitched it in a while. And the center of that piece is it's sort of a needle painted, rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's diagrammed out, how, where you're supposed to use these colors. It's a white and sort of four shades of brown that you sort of travel through. But it's wool. So going from silk, right, where everything is fine and reflective, it's very forgiving, right?
Uh-huh.
Silk is very forgiving. So, and I realized that, doing this, because you can blend and you can, it's satin stitch, so you can overstitch a little bit to kind of fill in, and there's a lot of forgiveness there. So then to go back to this rabbit and try to do it in wool, there's no forgiveness at all, because each
so
of them is
much.
Like, no. So it's like moving from, working with a very, very fine paintbrush to, a crayon where you know, every stitch is so obvious.
Right.
So it's not easy to blend at all because the thread is so thick.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to figure out how to make that a pretty elegant transition blend after going from silk, where it's kind of easy to do or easier to do. I'm struggling with
it. Yeah,
I can see.
Yeah, that's yeah.
And part of it is just my approach to it as well, because now I know what it looks like in silk and I'm looking at this wool and I want to rip it out and do it all over again because I feel like I know this can be better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure how to get there yet. And really what it comes down to is doing the same thing, looking at pictures of rabbits instead of looking at pictures of the finished piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a little bit of that. So I'm not sure how that's going to go, but I'm frustrated trying to stitch in wool and blend, you know, artfully.
Right.
And the other thing is it's a scale thing. So with the stump work, the pieces, each of these petals is maybe 7/8 of an inch wide, right? They're tiny.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at them, even from, you know, a few feet away, it's tiny and there you've got all the stitching going on. It's very fine stitches. So to your eye, it all blends. It blends easily, right? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
With wool, where the thread itself is 1/8 of an inch wide, you
not
have to
so
stand
much.
Really far away before that starts to visually blend. So
she's across the street, folks.
Yeah, exactly. Or I just take my glasses off, in which case it looks marvelous.
There we go.
So yeah, I'm struggling with this a little bit because I feel like I'm capable of better work. And I look at it and it just looks so clumsy.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just the nature of it, but I feel like there must be somebody that can do it better. I know there are many people that can do a much better job with it. So I think the crewel is actually becoming more of a challenge for me to do well than working in silk.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, it is. It was an unexpected sort of find.
Yeah.
So
oh, I can imagine that.
So I go back to my B-wing, and then I'm happy.
You talk about going from one extreme to the other. Oh, man.
Yeah. And it's kind of fun. And then I look at this, and I'm like, wow, so I just sat here for 2 hours, and I've worked on this piece that's not even an inch and is going to be such a – and that's fine. You know, that's the nature of what we do, is that sometimes you work for a really long time on something that's very tiny.
Right. Right.
And that's okay. I have to stop thinking in terms of, you know, how much square footage did I cover in
yeah,
an hour?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it doesn't work that way with this.
Yeah. Just
at
be
all.
Demoralizing. So, yeah.
I guess. I don't know. So, yeah. So I'm stitching insect wings. So that's kind of cool.
Well, that's because to me, that in stump work, that's kind of the ultimate. If you can get insect wings that look reasonably like the insects wings.
Yeah, that's
pretty neat.
And I think that you find finer differences. So I'm using a 32 gauge wire, which is a pretty thin wire. And I'm stitching this wing, and this is the first one I've done. And even this, I'm looking at it and saying, you know what? I had a choice between a 33, which is a little bit thinner gauge wire, mm-hmm. and a 32. And I thought, I have the 32. It's not going to be that much of a difference. Let me just do this. You know what? At this scale, it's a big difference because what's ending up happening is it's the wire almost feels like it's overwhelming the wing at this scale.
Okay.
So,
uh-huh.
So I think after I do this one, I might get a thinner gauge wire and try doing it that way and see if it looks better.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's worth doing that because I think it'll be the scale works out better at you know, for this.
Right.
So, but I'm going to have to try. So we'll see.
That's fun. Okay. We got to start buying lottery tickets.
Yes.
Yeah. Because we got to go to New Zealand.
Okay.
Yvette Stanton, the queen of white work. Actually, I'm going to elevate her to goddess of white work. I think we're just going to go goddess. Goddess of white work.
Right.
Yvette Stanton.
Okay, I like
it. The Association of New Zealand Embroiderers Guilds annual meeting July 13 to 19 next year in Nelson, New Zealand. So that's why we got to have the lottery tickets, because we got to, one of us has to win. All right. So then,
yeah, so we
then,
can go.
Yeah. Because otherwise, yeah, it's a long swim. So, okay. So pretty we much. Can, we can go to this thing, and Yvette is doing two classes. She has a early hardanger is one, and it's an intermediate level, 9.5 by 9.5 centimeters. So what, 2.5 centimeters per inch? So pretty small piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
what, 5 inches?
4 or 5 by 5, something like that. Something mm-hmm. like that, yeah. Okay, and here's Yvette dropping the hammer. This is not a class for hardanger beginners, and there will be some accurate preparatory work required before class. Whoa, Yvette. Students will need to know how to properly stitch cluster blocks. Okay, well, I can do that. But that word properly is making me nervous.
Aw.
I'm pretty sure I can do cluster blocks in my sleep, but properly makes me think maybe Yvette's got a little extra twist to it. I don't know. I mean, they're just basic blocks. But so anyway, yeah, so she's dropped the hammer on this one. This is for intermediates, and it's a two-day class. And then you can complete the panel into small mat, pincushion, needle box, or box top. So, and she shows mm-hmm. she shows the thing there. So it's pretty neat. You know, I mean, it's just this beautiful, delicate hardanger stuff, linen on linen. It's beautiful. And then the next class we would take, Portuguese white work sampler. Now this is all levels,
mm-hmm.
11.5 by 11.5 centimeters. So we're, yeah, what? 5 inches, 6 inches, somewhere in there. Yep. Basics of Portuguese white work, known as something else I can't pronounce, from northern Portugal. I love this. If you're scared of bullion stitch, there's no need to be. This class is a great way to learn and perfect bullions on 38 count linen. And just about 2/3 of the design is bullions. So if you're afraid of them, by the time you're done, you know them well.
Yeah, well, you know, that's funny that you bring that up. So the cruel piece has quite a bit of bullion stitch on it, making up flowers. And it's funny that you bring that up, because that was another one that I looked at and said, oh, God, this looks terrible. This is like, you know, the most evil French knot ever. And when you first start out, you know, I struggled with it. But then once you figure out like the little tricks of how to get it to go,
yeah,
they're easy as pie, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. They're not.
They're not. They're not hard. It's just a matter of figuring out, all right, how do I hold the thread to keep it the right tension? At what point do I tighten it? And at what point do I let it be a little bit loose? You know, how do I push the thread down so that it rolls the right way? Like it's just, that's another one. You just do a bunch of them, and then you figure out by failing how to not fail, right?
Yep.
So,
yeah, best advice I ever got on bullion knots is from Mary Corbett with 1T. Use a milliner's needle, because the eye is as wide as the same width as the shank. So, yep, and that changes the game, yeah.
It does. But
yeah, that's really, it's like French knots. They freak people out. But once you figure out how to hold the thread to keep the tension, you can trot right along with those things. They're not that big a deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I remember being a little kid. That's one of the few things I remember almost vividly, was French knots. And because I guess that's one of the things my grandmother decided I needed to know. And I remember struggling with them, because you don't know to hold to loop the thread right at the surface of the fabric, right? You just kind of make this big old loop, and then you hope it's going to work out for the best, and then you end up with a knot, right?
Right, yeah.
And there's no French about it.
Right, and it's a big old floppy knot, too.
Correct, right. But once you figure out that, oh, if I hold it really close to the fabric and that's where my loop is, then it's easy as pie, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just that little trick. These are the kind of things that I feel like you would benefit, or I, or someone, not me, because I'm not doing these things, from sitting with other people, because there'll be somebody there, or a class, right? Because there'll be somebody there that would say, oh, look, you're struggling with that because you don't know this little trick.
Right.
If you do it this way, it's really easy.
Right. Exactly.
So,
yeah, that's where that veteran seeing a veteran do it, yeah, you can pick it up quickly. Yep.
Yeah, so. Because you have, you know, your learning curve is shorter because you're they've already done all the failing for you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Right. So, and it's not really failing; it's just learning. So, it's I think that's going to be good. So, we haven't talked about we're talking about these New Zealand classes seminar next year.
Yes.
So you and I have talked a little bit about it for the EGA seminar, which I think is in October. I went through the lottery process. So I know we have talked about how, you know, it's a 4-5 day seminar, I think. And then there's 1 day classes and then there's two sets of 2 day classes. There's 4 day classes. And we have been told, we were advised, these fill up really fast. So if you want to take a class, as soon as it opens up, send in your registration stuff and hope, right? And the way that you register is you pick the classes that you want, but then they also ask for second and third choices on the classes, which of course I was like, well, you know, I'll pick second class and then the third class, it's never going to get to that anyway, because I'm registering like within the first hours of it being open. So it'll be fine. Well, I'll tell you.
I have a feeling I know where this went.
Yeah. So I did two-day classes. And the first one I got my second choice. And the other one I got my third choice. So the one that I had wanted to do, like the one that was like, oh, this is why I'm going to seminar, not a shot. Not even a shot. So I'm going to take the classes that I got. Yeah, so it really is true. They fill up pretty much immediately.
Like trying to buy tickets to a Beatles reunion.
Yes, exactly. I know, but this is like our little niche-y hobby here. So, but that's going to be fun though. The pieces that I did that I was able to get registered for are going to be fun. And perhaps I was biting off, you know, because I chose really difficult pieces
for
the things, of course, because, you know, it's a year from now and I know that between now and then I tend to focus really hard on things that I'm interested in. And it's funny because my son is now doing the same thing and I see him doing exactly what I do, which is he takes an interest in something. Okay. So, all right, we'll divert for a moment. So this is Jeremy being exactly like his mom, and not intentionally so. So he was in his room for hours last night, but he's a 14-year-old boy, and that's what they do. So about 9 o'clock, he comes out, and we're just chatting. And I was like, what have you been doing in there? You know, and I kind of don't want to know, but, you know, I ask anyway. And he says, well, you know, he's taking a computer programming class, and he's taking a bunch of computer stuff. He's like, well, tomorrow in school, we're supposed to be learning this other computer language to be able to program graphics. And he looks at me kind of bashfully. It was funny. He's like, so I was kind of really interested in it. So I taught it to myself. And then he starts laughing. I'm like, but you're going to do it in class tomorrow, right? He's like, yeah, but, you know, it's kind of interesting. So I just kind of did it all by myself. So I'm like, you are my son, if there's any question, because but he does the same thing that you and I both do, which is, you know, you get focused on something and then you have to know everything about it. You can't let it go.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
He is that person. So I made a replica of myself.
It's in the genes. It's in the genes.
It is. So
that's great, so that's though. That's cool. Great. Hey, if you're going to have a teenager in his room for multiple hours and he comes out and says, I learned a computer language, man, that's just stop and applaud right there. Yep.
There's an element of that, you know, yes, there's definitely praise to be had and I'm very proud of him. And then there's the other part of, you know, I'm a little worried about your social life, but, you know, but his friends are all like nerdy too. So it all works out. So this is all good.
They'll all have good jobs and be just fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's right. So, so seminar is going to be good for next year. So I'm registered for that. And whatever pieces. I mean, you can't, I just kind of, I looked at it as I want to go and I want to have the experience of taking classes because I'm not doing that, and just being in that environment. And, you know, you and I will end up going anyway, I'm sure,
yeah.
To do podcast stuff. But I really wanted to have the class experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it was less about which pieces it was and more about being able to sit with an instructor and learn exactly these things, these little tips. So even if the piece isn't the most difficult piece, that's where you learn those little perfecting things, you know, like you with the pin stitch, you know, of how to start, you know, a cross stitch without having any kind of away knot or any of those things, like those little fine, you know, how to perfect things, how to become great at them. So that's going to be fun. I'm excited about that.
That's great. Oh yeah. And pin stitch. Oh man. Now I'm not a Vana master pin stitcher, but I got that down pretty good now. And it really is, you know, I was thinking the other weird things you go through your mind. I was thinking the other night that one of the pluses of starting each thread with a pin stitch is it's one less length of thread that is woven under other stitches.
Right.
And
right, exactly.
It really, so you don't have nearly as many conflicts of, oh, I've already woven under there and I really need some place to end this thread.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a real plus. But I still have like a half inch tail that I have to cut off, which I don't mind. I'd be curious to see how Vana does it so she doesn't have anything to cut off. Yeah. Okay, so we have not been to the Chili Hollow thing in some time. And, of course, Jane has renamed this thing again. And she probably renamed it three times since we last talked about it. But this is a very positive name that she has come up with.
Okay.
It's the Jane Wood Chili Hollow blog about needlepoint-related topics designed to inspire your stitching.
I like it.
Now, see, that's really uplifting and exciting, I think. So
I think so.
She should hang on to that for 30 minutes or so before she changes it again.
Yeah.
But she does this thing every now and then. She names it monthly, but I'm not sure it's always a monthly thing. The Smart Cookie Award and a Beverly something. I thought I'd typed that out, but I hadn't. So anyway, Beverly. Uses custom leather pet name tags with her family Christmas stockings. So she has her initials and the date and the recipient's initials put on these leather tags and then stitched inside the stocking. Huh. I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah, that is.
Because I'm not always excited about putting my initials on something I've stitched because to me it kind of detracts a little bit from the, you know, from the thing. But
you want to sign it in some way,
right?
Like you would sign a painting,
right? Exactly, and you should because there's a lot of work goes into that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so and there's a link at the Jane Wood Chili Hollow whatever blah 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 Inspire Your Stitching website that for an Etsy shop where you can get these leather collar or leather tags and have
That's
them custom
cool.
stamped. So yeah, I thought that was just a neat thing. Put it inside the stocking, and it's there. And it's not a flimsy thing. It's the real deal. So,
mm-hmm.
Yay. So that was good to Beverly. Man, it makes me mad. I'm sure I typed that out. I wanted Beverly's last name, but I didn't. So, anyway. So we'll have a link to the Etsy shop and to the chilihollowblogspot.com thing for that.
So that raises an interesting question then. Talking about painting and art and stitching. So for a needlepoint piece where it's the whole canvas is covered, would you ever – I mean, I've never seen that done. Like samplers are always signed by the stitcher, and you expect to see that and a date. But needlepoint, like contemporary stuff, you never see signed, or at least that I know of, nor would you see embroidery. But now I almost think like the stump work piece, I don't think it would be out of place at all to stitch tiny initials somewhere in the date. And I think I might actually like to do that now.
Yeah.
But so what is your feeling about that?
Well, I always think you should sign it. And needlepoint, sometimes needlepoint, there's you actually have to leave out a little part of the design to make room for your initials. And I won't do that.
Yeah.
So I'll if it's a solid thing, I'll finish it and I won't have my initials on it. But, yeah, samplers and these stockings and any embroidery, there's always room to stitch your initials in and a date.
Mm-hmm.
But so what I have some that are framed, and then on the paper on the back, then I just write my name and the year on there.
Yeah.
So at least it's on there somewhere. But no, I think I think you should have it on there. Now, Vanna has a little trick that she takes a piece of cloth,
mm-hmm.
and stitches her initials on it, and then sews that to the back of an ornament or whatever
yes.
piece it is. And I think that's a brilliant way to do it, because then you don't have anything on the front other than the design,
right.
but you have a permanent
mm-hmm.
thing
that's,
on there.
That's common with quilting, too. In
oh,
fact,
is it?
You often will see, like, you can get them printed up, those little tags.
Oh, okay.
So it'll be a little, it'll like a, almost like a 1x3-inch tag, you know, lovingly stitched by grandma or your name or whatever it is, and it's stitched into the back of the quilt. So that I've seen quite frequently.
Oh, okay. So that's, yeah. All right. Well, that makes some sense. And then,
mm-hmm.
and on the back. So then there you have
have
a place and,
right.
and it doesn't detract from the design in any way. Yeah. But, no, I think you should always put your, now I always try to, I don't always do it right, but I always try to make it so it's not very big and not real obvious, but it's
yes.
there.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But it makes sense though, because and I'm glad you brought this up, because I wouldn't have thought to do it, but I'm looking around the room that I'm sitting in, and I have one painting where the whole painting is just, you know, it's a giant wash of color, and that the artist signed the back
mm-hmm.
because it would have broken into the painting. But then I have drawings that were done by an artist friend of mine, and those are all signed on the front, and I wouldn't expect them to not be, and it doesn't detract from it, because it you'd expect it to be there. So now I would never have thought to put any kind of signature on the front of a piece, but now I completely will. Like this particular one, you know, it's got a big open area of silk that, you know, a small initials, you know,
sure,
probably close into the piece, I would imagine, as opposed to towards the edge, initials and the date. I will absolutely do that, because I think it kind of adds something to it in a way.
Yeah. Most embroiderers seem to want to do it near the piece. Cause yeah, there's usually
yes.
a lot of space out on the side. Most want to do it near the piece and do it small. And then see,
yep.
I have my initials. I've worked it out so that I take the G and the P,
mm-hmm.
and so the G comes around, and when it comes back up from the bottom, then that portion of that forms the spine for the P, and
right.
I have a little GP thing that is all one unit.
A little icon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that way I can backstitch it fairly quickly and at different sizes, and then of course mm-hmm. the year is whatever, you know, you just have to put it in. But
yeah.
Oh yeah. I think you should sign because I mean, you just put a lot of work into it, and if you know, you hope somebody along the way will decide that it's worth keeping after you're gone, and you should
yeah.
have your name on it. You know, mm-hmm. yeah, you should have some recognition or some acknowledgement that, yeah, it was me. So.
Yeah. And I like the year too, because
it,
for two reasons. One, because if you are looking at your own sort of stitch pathway, you can see, all right, that piece I did, you know, at the beginning, and I can see what it looks like. And, oh, this piece I forgot when I did it, but now I'm looking at it. You can see over time how you improve or how you change styles, because I imagine, you know, what you like when you're younger isn't necessarily what you like when you're older. And so you can see sort of an evolution of your own craft. But
right.
it also then puts it into context. So, you know, you look at something that was stitched in, you know, 2003. Okay, well, that was the year my son was born. So, you know, it immediately puts that piece in a place in time for you.
Right.
You know, and I imagine for people that stitch a lot of pieces, there would be times where you forget. Although I could also imagine for many people, just looking at the piece, you remember, you know, what TV you watched while you're doing it, or you remember what was going on while you,
right.
know.
Right.
But yeah, I'm so glad that came up, because I'm definitely going to do that now. And I think that's going to make me very happy to do so.
Yeah. No,
and
I mean,
it's not even an ego thing. It's just this makes sense, you know?
Right. Yep. Yeah. No, your initials should go on there. You bet. Yep. Ooh,
cool.
running out of time here. Got to get this one in though. Also from the Jane Wood Chili Hollow, blah, blah, blah. She sent a link, Needle in a Haystack, which is where I got that Alba Maxima linen from.
Yes.
The lady whose name I didn't write that down either. Boy, I'm just lazy and sloppy here today. Anyway, the person who owns Needle in a Haystack is doing some videos, and she does a set of videos on stretcher bars. And mm-hmm. I watched them, and not because I didn't know how to put stretcher bars together, but she did a really good job of showing how to put them together and how to get them squared up, and then also how to use Evertight stretcher bars.
Good.
And
everyone seems to love.
Right. And I thought she just did a real good job on, you know, just a simple little piece of infrastructure, but sometimes a struggle for people. And mm-hmm. so to go to Needle in a Haystack, or it's needlestack.com/videos, and then you can see those videos. But I thought that was really good. Just a handy little thing to watch. One of those you watch one time, okay, I got it, and you're good to go. But for some people, and for people, just to put them together and to get them squared up, a lot of times it takes a hammer and some monkeying around, I thought that was just one of those handy little things that you don't think about till you actually need it, and then I sure wish somebody would show me. So yeah, that was good.
So okay, so we'll leave off with that. But so we've never done this, a cliffhanger, which is ridiculous, right? It's a needlepoint cliffhanger.
I won't use the joke about you dating him. We'll just move on to the cliffhanger.
Oh God! All right. So yeah. So next time we're going to talk about slate frames, because Mary Corbett had been talking about them and advising strongly that slate frames are the way to go for a lot of things. Because we were talking about scroll frames and how to kit up larger pieces and how to set them up. And she talked about slate frames. So I've done a lot of reading about slate frames and a lot of research. And so I have some interesting, potentially interesting things to talk about next time about slate frames.
Okay. Cliffhanger right there. Slate frame. Cliffhanger. Yep. Okay. So that's going to be 2 weeks, because next week is Thanksgiving. And so we're going to be lazy and take the week off. So no midweek show, no Sunday show during the Thanksgiving week. We're both traveling, and quite frankly, it'll just be easier for us to not do them. So we're going to take the easy way out. This coming Sunday, Celeste Chalasani is with us. Celeste, Stumpwork. That was a good conversation we had with her.
Yep.
It was fun. So Celeste is Sunday to talk about Stumpwork. That's it. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Take care.